It is a Tuesday edition of the Morning Tailgate. Light up the cue, put those drinks on ice. The boys are back in the building. Vince Sapienza, Clay Baker, and Vinny Bonsignor.
Been a minute.
Back on assignment. It has been a long 5 days?
5 days, yeah.
5 days since
including Saturday and Sunday.
It's been so long.
We're getting the band back together.
You know, check this out. My glasses broke yesterday.
Why'd you break
them? Just as I was getting to the airport.
That's not a way to start the week.
And I had to still write my story because Antonio Pierce spoke yesterday at 11 a.m. I had to listen to it. It's 3 hours ahead, of course.
Right.
So I had to listen to that, then run to the airport with my traveling companion, Ed Graney, and then I was going to write my story from the airport.
Okay.
I get to the airport, and I realize my reading glasses broke, and I didn't have a backup pair. So I'm like, I found these at they do have reading glasses at those little newsstand stores at the airport, and this is a women's.
Are those leopard?
Yeah, I could find. This is all they had, so I was like, "Can I see through them? Then I want them. I don't care."
Seems fitting. Leopards, panthers. We got the big cats this week, and we got a good show for you coming up today. Jason Fitz, as always on Tuesday, Yahoo Sports joins us. In the 8 o'clock hour, we got to hear from Antonio Pierce. We're going to hear from a little Gardner Minshew from this past week. And this is kind of where we start, guys. It was Victory Monday yesterday. What a show that was. The callers were lining up to celebrate. To enjoy, to bask in the glow of shoving it in the rest of the NFL's faces. Everyone said they couldn't do it.
Refreshing.
Refreshing was the word. A refreshing Victory Monday.
Now do it again.
And that's obviously the task. And Clay, we were just talking 20 minutes. We missed the news by about 20 minutes yesterday, right after we went off air. The big news, especially for our little bubble here in Las Vegas as it pertains to the Raiders, Bryce Young benched. And we'll take a deeper dive probably a little bit later, but we got to get to the top of the news. Bryce Young benched for Andy Dalton. Dave Canales.
Who is still in the league, apparently.
The Red Rifle.
Did you know that he was on the Panthers?
I did know that. I did not think we would be talking about him or giving him a moment of discussion, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the challenge. And as much as it was news to the rest of the National Football League that you would bench former number one pick, the guy you traded up for, the guy you traded a lot of things for. And we don't need to get into that, but benched after, 17 games of his NFL career. So
it feels like they're doing this for Bryce more than
and that's a hard team. Sell, isn't it? Isn't that a hard sell to the fan base? Even to the players sometimes say, this is in your best interest
right,
to not
we need
play.
You to take a step back. And it looks like he's just lost out there, which that's not the Bryce Young that we saw at Alabama. But I feel like this is more about trying to save him, actually, rather than bury him. Because I don't think that the Panthers truly think they're going anywhere, necessarily. You know, I don't think that they have the talent across the board to legitimately think that they can make something special of this season. But at the same time, they don't want to just completely destroy this young quarterback who, like you just said, you cannot not overlook that, Vince.
Yeah, you can't.
What they gave up to move all the way up to go get him. And so I think that this is more to actually, and it's ironic almost when you say he got benched, you're thinking about, well, there he goes. That's it for Bryce Young. The Bryce Young experiment is over. I think it's actually to try to save Bryce Young than anything to save the season for the, I'm sure that has a little bit to do with it, but realistically, when you look at that program and where they are, they're not playing for anything. And you would imagine, okay, well, what's the harm in playing this young quarterback and having him grow and develop along with this team? Well, I think the harm that the Panthers see is we may lose him entirely if we continue to run him out under these circumstances.
Clay, another way to bring up the word refreshing, because that is refreshing, because you don't see that in the NFL. You don't see organizations say, hey, let's take a step back for a second. Well, because the NFL is a moving train. You got to get on. Mm-hmm. It does not stop. So for an organization to say, hold on, let's take a step back, it is refreshing, because we were just talking about the lifespan quarterbacks in this league, of coaches in this league. You don't have time. You don't have time to wait. So for the organization to do this, it is a little bit refreshing in that sense, in terms of saving the player, because again, you put a lot in that basket. You put all your eggs in the Bryce Young basket in not just where you drafted him, but in what it took to draft him and what you're building around. You're assuming you have your franchise quarterback. You can't build the rest of your team like the Carolina Panthers from the ground up unless you have your franchise quarterback. So, a little refreshing. We're going to continue that on a Tuesday.
Dave Tepper met with Dave Canales, the new head coach, after the Game 1 loss, and you could already start to feel that, you know, pressure is starting to build about how things are starting to look on offense. And think about how this was supposed to look in year two for Bryce Young. Frank Reich was still supposed to be the coach. There was going to make some additions on free agency to make things better for him. But still, the cast around Bryce Young, not very good.
No, it's not. And that's why I'm saying this is more to protect the asset and protect Bryce Young and maybe give him a little bit of a better chance, especially just kind of regrouping on the sideline. I'm sure that was the messaging. Like, we're not abandoning you here. And I know that you might not be able to see the forest for the trees in this move, but this is really a move to help you and get you back and kind of let you work in the lab a little bit behind the scenes and see if that's going to be what gets you turned around. And you mentioned David Tepper, the owner. This is Bryce Young was his call. Like, he did all the dinners. He did all the – remember, they traded up, and they had a decision between C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, and I guess Anthony Richardson might have been in that conversation and some of the other quarterbacks that were coming out last year. But he's the guy that fell in love with, and it was very well chronicled that it was the owner who fell in love with Bryce Young and kind of mandated that that's who they draft. So he has nobody to blame. And by the way, the coach that's in place now wasn't even there when that decision was made. He was brought in to help save, you know, Bryce Young and get this thing, you know, on track. And that obviously hasn't happened. So when the owner starts looking for people to blame, you better look right in the mirror and just accept that. I'm not pointing fingers necessarily at him or saying you idiot, because everyone thought Bryce Young. I liked CJ Stroud. I'm going to just say that, and I'm not that's not retroactively. I fell in love with him at the scouting combine when I got a chance to talk to him and watch the tape. I just thought he was more of an NFL quarterback than any quarterback that was coming into the draft last year. So that's neither here nor there, but this was an ownership call to draft him, and so he better remember that when he's deciding who to fire and who to get rid of and all that stuff.
Tough spot for the organization, no doubt. There's a lot to be desired right now if you're a Panthers fan and what you're getting excited about. Well, if you are a Panthers fan and you are trying to find something to get excited about, you come to Vegas, take in a game, and see the Raiders, because the Raiders their home schedule at Allegiant Stadium this Sunday against Carolina.
And this is huge news for the Raiders, because now all of a sudden, you know, don't think for a second that Patrick Graham was seeing what everyone else was seeing on film about how things were going with Bryce Young and kind of ways that you can attack him and be successful. And now all of a sudden, you know, I know it's Andy Dalton, and we were kidding. Did you even remember that he was in the league? But it is Andy Dalton, and it is a veteran quarterback, and he is somebody that has some savviness to him and changes the entire complexion of how you're now going to defend the Panthers and attack their quarterback position. So for the Raiders' perspective, you know, they don't care one way or another. They got to now figure out a way, all right, what do we have to do to defend the Panthers with Andy Dalton as a quarterback? And that was why it was so interesting hearing from Antonio Pierce yesterday. He literally didn't even know by the time he got to the podium at 11 a.m. Pacific time that change had been made. He was, as he said, I was in the office, you know, meet with my coaches. We were in meetings all day. What were they meeting about, Vince? Putting together the game plan.
Probably the run game.
Yeah, that, but also.
If I were to pick one meeting, that'd be my guess.
Yeah, it was all of it. It was, right? So, we'll get into the run game, because that was, Antonio Pierce did not mince words about that. Or who to blame for what's going on right now. Not necessarily blame, but, you know, where the responsibility
it's blame.
Ultimately
it's,
lies.
It's
and
blame.
It's with the offensive line.
Yeah,
and he made that extremely clear.
We'll dive into that run game here in a bit. But the question that becomes, and that's, I guess, where we're going to go. Clay, you had some numbers on a former Raider top pick and Bryce Young. We're going to get into those. Do you want to get into those now?
Well, no. But it's an unfortunate comparison. You know what I mean?
You know what?
But it's like, how far and what does that sample size look like?
Okay,
when
well,
you
now
give
we
a young
get
guy
into,
a chance.
We're on the topic. We're hitting it. Clay, hit us with what you found.
Well, it was a comparison with Jamarcus Russell.
Oh, boy.
And it was through 583 career pass attempts. And when you lay them on top of each other, it doesn't look good. When you think about a young man's trajectory at quarterback, you know, Bryce Young, 3,122 yards versus Jamarcus, 3,626 yards. Okay, fine. But the 17 touchdowns and 18 interceptions that Jamarcus had is paramount and akin to the 11 touchdowns and 13 picks that Bryce Young has. The passer rating is kind of negligible, right on top of each other. But the 68 rating versus a 70 rating, that is still something that kind of disguises the overall message that you're still not playing winning football. The ball is getting intercepted a lot. And quite honestly, the yardage isn't matching up with what kind of production you should have after almost 600 pass attempts. So even the Raiders were kind of put in a quandary because they had invested so much draft capital into a Jamarcus Russell.
Well,
what do you do?
In that case, they were just such a bad football team that they had the number one pick overall,
mm-hmm.
which pretty much tells you what Jamarcus was coming into. And I'm not making any excuses for Jamarcus. I don't know if it would have worked in any situation. But he was walking into a horrible situation. And Bryce Young, even though the Panthers came from 11 to 1 or 10 to 1 to move up to get him, but not only were they a bad team, they gave up a bunch of assets that they could have used to
surround him with
Exactly.
So, a basis, a foundation.
This year's first round pick, which, oh, by the way, became Caleb Williams with the Chicago Bears. So there was a lot that they gave up that could have gone to helping a Bryce. So the bottom line is, both quarterbacks walked into horrible situations. And that's where I always sort of, have to start. You have to separate what is fact or fiction in terms of how bad the quarterback actually is versus how bad the situation actually is.
Absolutely true. But it is that is like the death knell comparison. You don't want to be compared to another bust that was taken in an early situation.
No doubt.
And that's kind of like where Bryce Young is.
Right? Yeah, those numbers are eerie. I got to be honest. Mm-hmm. Those are eerie. And
because remember, Jamarcus and that team, it was hopeless and helpless.
Yeah, because the problem is, and this kind of goes back to the first point, is it's not getting any better in Carolina. Like, their weapons aren't all of a sudden coming through the door. Not today,
yeah.
Not next year. Their draft capital doesn't essentially reset for another couple years.
Well, you want to get even you want to go a little bit even deeper? Look at this year's quarterbacks and look at their numbers.
Right.
It's not good.
Right.
And I'm
firm. But you could argue in every situation those teams are well insulated around their quarterback more so than Bryce Young in year two.
Yes, I agree with that. And you hope for whether it's Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, that they're going to continue to improve. But I'll say this: watching Caleb on Sunday night, that offensive line is just horrible. Like, I've never seen a quarterback just get beat down like he got
beat down.
Seven
sacks?
Yeah.
Sacked seven times, probably would have been a bunch more if he wasn't able to run.
All they were doing was, at one point, they just said, just throw it side to side, instead of downfield, because he didn't have time to throw it downfield. So, it's funny because we talk about all the weapons that the Chicago Bears brought in. It's great. Keenan Allen, the running back. There was another, or they drafted Rome.
Great.
Right? Great.
Fantastic.
What'd you do with the offensive line?
Yeah, not great. So what I'm saying, though, is that the weapons and the insulation
and the offense,
on the offense is just far superior in every situation.
I don't know about far superior, but a little bit better, because we're seeing what's going on with Chicago.
In the two games that I've seen with Carolina,
even if
Andy Dalton is playing at quarterback, I don't know if those results or anything changes.
It might look a little bit better.
Results aside, not what you want to see if you're a Panthers fan.
No.
Not what you want to see. That's now two head coaches with your franchise quarterback and a benching now before the completion of week three of his second season.
Yeah.
It's tough. Andy Dalton's going to be the guy for the Raiders. That's where the attention now lies for the silver and black, and that's where we will start to pivot and turn our attention to. But a fantastic and fascinating NFL conversation in general, because if you've listened to this show, I've been on record to say this is a league of haves and have-nots. Carolina thought they had their have, and look how much struggle they're having. So just because you draft one doesn't mean you got one.
And yes, it's extremely important to point out, it's on you as an organization as well. Like, it's easy to blame the quarterback. But where are you as an organization? What is the infrastructure that you've built around? You know, my first experience recovering the NFL was the Rams in 2016, and it looked completely. It was Jeff Fisher, who had no business really at that point coaching the Rams. The offensive coordinator was a former tight end coach who had never been an offensive coordinator. There was no offensive line. There were no weapons. Jared Goff went out there and looked bad. It was 0-6 that, you know, he started the last six or seven games, and he looked terrible, and everyone was like, bust, which is something that I don't even think Jared Goff has completely recovered from perceptionally. Like, everyone still remembers that first image that you had of Jared Goff. What happens the very next year? You bring in Sean McVay. He brings in guys like LaFleur, Taylor, who's now the coach at with the Cincinnati Bengals, Greg Olsen. He tripled and quadrupled down on offensive infrastructure. He goes out and gets Andrew Whitworth. He goes out and gets Robert Woods, the wide receiver. They draft Cooper Kupp. And then all of a sudden, the infrastructure around Jared Goff looks tremendous. They win the division that year. He looks really good. So it's as an organization, just as much as it is, if Jared Goff had lined up behind that same 2016 team and 2017 team, in 17, he might not even be in the league anymore. Like, it might, if it was going to continue on that path organizationally, Vince, who knows what Jared Goff would have ended up turning out to be. So it's on the organization. We blame the players all the time. How much of this way is goes to the organization and what they didn't do for their quarterback?
I think the organization might feel pretty good about it, only because as abysmal as it was last year for the Panthers, Andy Dalton did start a game. And, you know, 361 yards last year, two touchdowns, zero picks, and a 37-27 loss to the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, boy.
So the organization feels there is enough talent, and Andy Dalton
then that's, they're idiotic
is the guy that they
they're
think
idiotic
is help
if they believe that, if they truly believe that. Because they're not. I mean, and they still lost the game, and yeah, he had some nice numbers. We'll see how that goes for a full season. And he will make it look better because he is a veteran. He'll know where to go with the ball at times. But I don't know if it's going to change in terms of the wins and losses. And I don't. It doesn't magically change the Panthers into a team that has sufficient infrastructure to help develop a talented young quarterback.
I just don't want to see a Jeff Saturday, Matt Ryan situation coming in here and finding a way to win 25-20 against the Raiders on a week.
You know, in hockey, obviously, much more leash, much more games. The schedule is just not a comparison. Yeah. But what will happen is even veteran coaches will pull out players time to time. One, because you can afford to in a season like that. But if something's not going right, you know, especially when you talk about goal scorers, right? I liken goal scorers in hockey a lot to quarterback because when you're going, you're going.
Right.
When you're scoring, you're scoring. And when you're not, you are not. And everybody knows it. And it gets bigger and bigger. The stick gets heavier and heavier. Guys, so many times they'll pull them out, healthy scratch. Tough. Tough day. Hockey players pride themselves on playing every single day, being available every single game. But the coaches talk about all the time, as much as they pride themselves, one of the biggest assets you can have in hockey is to be able to take a game, go up to the box, see the game from a different vantage point. Look at it from a different vantage point. Not have to and see different things, open it up.
That's true.
The numbers are, I don't have them in front of me, but the numbers are astounding of stuff like that happening. The next game they go back in and play one of their better games. And players have told me all the time, you know, I feel so much better going back in.
Great point.
Now, is Bryce Young going to come back in week four and play? I don't know. Who knows? We'll see what happens in week three. But I do think there is some kind of value, and that's why I think it's so refreshing for an organization that has done a lot of things we've all questioned over there in Carolina. This, to me, feels like the right one regardless of what happens Sunday, right? Because they're not in the wins and losses game right now. Let's be honest. They're not in the wins and losses season right now. I know Dave Canales is saying we're making this to, one, not let the season get away from us and to help their quarterback.
Valid, yeah.
But let's call this what it is. You're saving your quarterback so that he is not irreparably damaged for the rest of his career. Because too many times we've seen quarterbacks just get trotted out there and get crushed. And whatever potential they may have had has just been sandwiched out of them. I mean, you look at a guy like David Carr, number one pick for Houston.
He could have used something like that.
All the talent in the world.
The number one pick overall in that organization.
All the talent in the world. Everyone they bet their bread on. They did everything but what? Get him an offensive line.
Yeah.
The most sacked quarterback, I believe, still.
I'll tell you, probably a record that should never be broken, like 68 sacks.
I mean, the fact that he is able to be on TV and be intelligent,
still looking good.
And looking good. And that's, you know, a half joke, but like this dude made a living getting crushed. And
And Charlie Casserly helped build that team. And that guy, it's not, you know, he was a smart individual that knew how to build teams.
They had no idea how to protect him. It's hard to do.
For an organization that we've questioned a lot, this feels like, okay, I see where you're going with that one. We are going to turn our attention now to the Silver and Black. Coming up, we're going to hear from head coach Antonio Pierce. We're going to dive deep into what needs to change come week three. It's the Tailgate.
First and goal. They're right on the doorstep. Minshew's in the shotgun with Madison to his left. They spot the ball. He hikes. He hands. Madison up the middle. He leans. Touchdown, Raiders! Alexander Madison with a one-yard touchdown run through the middle of the defense. The Raiders capitalize on the pick by Spillane, and they are right in this game with 2:36 to go in the third.
Back here on Raider Nation Radio, Raiders Radio Network with the call and the Madison TD run. But still, when you take a look at the overall, are you really getting the kind of run game you were hoping for? And you're thinking about this part of the season, we'll take your thoughts at 702-365-9200. As the Raiders really just having 1.6 yards per rushing attempt, that is not going to get it done. Can they get it right? And how's it going to look when it gets right?
Well, first things first, Jason Horowitz is fantastic on these Raiders calls.
Yes.
Has been, always.
He was feeling it.
But man, was he? He had a couple extra crab cakes week two. I mean, he was feeling himself, and it sounded great. Just some great, great calls. That Madison one was fantastic. But yeah, let's dive into the biggest elephant in the room, something that's being talked about in just about every corner of Raider Nation. It's this run game. The Raiders, and I said this yesterday, the Raiders, what's impressive about Sunday's week two win is not that they won. It's not that they went on the road and beat Baltimore, massive underdogs, all that stuff. That's all great. It's how they won. It's the fact, in spite of themselves, they won the game. And they did it with Gardner Minshew's arm and his ability to get the ball to his weapons, facilitate in the most elite way possible. We talked about the good yesterday. We'll talk more about Gardner a little later in the show and probably throughout the week, because there's another opportunity for him to kind of take another step, I guess, in this offense this week. But we turn our attention to this run game. And Vinny and Clay, looking at the tape again. And again, that's why I'm excited for Marcus Johnson tomorrow, when Tape Don't Lie, and what he sees and what he's breaking down. But I'll tell you what I see. Week one, the offensive line was bad. Week two, it was worse. Specifically through 2.5 quarters. It was worse, which is a real problem when you're talking about the biggest growth of a season comes from week one to week two. Now, that being said, we're going to hear from Antonio Pierce here in just a moment. But I have to say I was completely wrong, because I thought this offensive line was going to be, you know, a feather in the cap for this offense, at least in terms of starting point. I was dead wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wrong. There's no other way to say it, because they have not been good enough. And before we hear Antonio Pierce, just your thoughts on what you saw in real time, and now that we're 2 days removed from week two, I mean, they just seem out of sorts.
Yeah, and for me, unfortunately, it does go back to training camp. They were getting their lunches eaten in training camp pretty much on a daily basis. We would, they were not in pads. Remember that? They're not in pads, so they can't fight back the way you normally would as an offensive line.
Look who they're playing. Look who they're facing. It's Christian Wilkins.
But
it's
still,
Max Crosby. No, that was like
that was also that part
was
of
the,
it.
That was the pass,
it,
right?
It was
the pass.
A little bit.
I was giving them. But, I'll be the first to admit it.
But I after a while, I'm like, yeah, but you know, as good as Christian is, as good as Max Crosby is, there's great players in the NFL that you got to play on a weekly basis. And they were struggling against sometimes the backups as well. So it didn't look good in training camp. Now, where I was always going was Colt Miller's not out there. Jackson Powers Johnson isn't out there. And also, you know, from experience, having covered the Raiders over the years, the offensive line, for whatever reason, it seems to get better as the year goes on. We've seen that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that as well. So you leave a little bit of room for that. There were position changes. Dylan Parham was moving from left guard to right guard. You didn't have Colton Miller. You didn't have Jackson Powers Johnson. So you figured, okay, that left side, that's not the left side that we're even going to see during the regular season. So how much do you have to play that into it? But the bottom line is, so for me, there was a lot of concern during training camp because it just didn't look good at all. And it's definitely carried over into the regular season. And we're making, okay, is Colton just rusty? Is he working his way back? Don't you put money on Colton eventually getting it together?
100%.
All right. But it's still,
I mean, we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet.
That's 2 weeks now.
And they've basically gotten a zero at left guard. Jackson Powers Johnson looked pretty darn good, energetic, in great spirits on Sunday. It just feels like he's headed maybe. I mean, at this point, what do you have to lose?
Yeah.
And, you know, put him out there.
And now we're not saying anything that no one else isn't saying. It's starting with head coach Antonio Pierce, who was asked yesterday, how do you fix the run game?
How do you get the run game going? How do you jumpstart that thing?
Man, it's got to start up front. It's got to start up front. It's, you know, it starts with, listen, I'm be honest and coaching cliche here, but it's with the, starts with me, it starts with our coaches, our offensive line coach, our coordinator. That's poor. That's piss poor. And it's not good enough, and our players are going to hear about it here in a second. We just can't do that. It's just, I mean, under 2 yards of carry, getting knocked back, you know, third and short, not getting it. I mean, there has to be an intent and a play style that we talked about, that we practice, that we've been preaching since day one, and it's not showing up on game day. So obviously, you know, if it's changes that need to be made or scheme, everything's on the table.
So that's Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce.
Absolutely right.
Being asked about the run game, specifically to the offensive line, our boy Q, with the question on that one yesterday during the press conference. And this is what I find fascinating about that. Last week, the same question was asked. What went wrong with the run game? Why weren't you able to pick it up? And he said it was everybody. It was running backs. It was the tight ends blocking. It was the offense. It was everybody. Pad level. Everybody was the reason for week one. Did not sound like that week two. I know he said it's on.
Well,
the
head coach. He said it's cliche. I got to say this. What I'm going to about ready to say.
But he didn't make any. It's the offensive line.
Yeah, and that might rub some people the wrong way that he's kind of pointing fingers at the offensive line. But I also don't like. Don't sugarcoat it, like that.
We see it.
We see it. Number one. Number two. You know you're gonna crack some heads in that meeting that you were referring to when you're gonna go talk to the players. You know that's what you're gonna be talking about. There's nothing wrong with being honest about a situation. I feel like everybody's an adult in that room. You know, it's a veteran offensive line, really, outside of the rookie who we haven't seen. It's a veteran offensive line. They hear, trust me, in film, there's nothing held back in film.
Well,
study.
And you see it. You can't hide
right.
in a film room. That's the beauty of the
so
film
So it's okay
room.
To say it. I'm okay with him saying it. Because here's another thing, and you've talked to coaches, Vince. And I know I've talked to him about this very kind of subject. Like, look, man, I've been given the message behind the scene. I've been talking to him, you know, in the locker room. It's nothing that. I got to amplify it a little bit more. So I'm going to put a little bit more, I'm going to go a little bit more public
right,
with this to
right.
try to push some buttons.
Yeah. And
I don't have any problem with that 100%. At all.
And I do understand kind of, it is week two, right? And I understand. I understand. I'm not saying don't sugarcoat it, but I also understand. I have a feeling, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this one. Antonio Pierce understands that those in the room and those that cover this team understand him and what he's getting across. So I feel like sometimes he's speaking to two different audiences when he goes up there. He's speaking to the national that's going to just clip whatever funny thing he says or what, you know, abrupt thing he says. And then he's talking to us. He's like, that's why he says, cliche, it starts with the coach. Da, da, da.
Yeah, but I'm going to say this.
But then he says, he's like, starts with the guys up front.
Yeah.
I think that's him telling us, like, yes, that's the problem. And, you know, a lot of questions were being brought up week one about Zamir. Well, what's going on? I thought that was going to be his big day. Antonio Pierce was asked about Zamir White and his quote-unquote struggles through 2 weeks.
No, I'm going to keep pumping him up. Our goal is to get 20-plus touches with him. That was a goal this week. Didn't happen. That's going to be a goal this week and every week while he's a starting running back and I'm here. So it ain't Zamir. We got to start up front, man. The big boys up front got to block, bottom line. They know it. We're going to talk about it here in a few minutes.
So he's doubling down right there. He's doubling. If he didn't say it in the first answer where it says starts up front, he just said it ain't Zamir. And when we're talking about the running game, no one else is running the ball except Zamir in terms of important type physical identity establishing runs. It's Zamir. So it's not him. There's only one other grouping. So we clearly know who it is. When I look at the film, left guard is what did
it's been
you call
a zero.
It? What did you a zero? It really has. They Cody Whitehair started the season. Played the whole game week one. Gets benched for the first half, Andrews Pete, and it was equally as frustrating for the Raiders sideline. Cody Whitehair comes back in the second half. Still a struggle on the offensive line. I mean, it was so much. The run game was such a struggle. Luke Getsy went to the Wildcat with Amir Abdullah, and that was their longest run. It was a four-yard gain in the third quarter up until that point. I mean, you talk about turning over every stone early on in a season. They've already rotated at left guard. They're doing wildcat packages. They did a lot of the Trey Tucker sweeps and things like that. A lot of horizontal stuff yesterday just to try and create some gaps, create some lanes for this offense. But you said yesterday, at the end of the day, it comes down to players, right, and executing.
In this case, I believe it does.
No,
I mean, it usually does,
agreeing,
right?
I'm agreeing.
No. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you know, now sometimes it gets to a point where, and, you know, the Carolina Panthers are going to be asking themselves this question, is it also a talent issue as well? And I think that this offensive line probably is another one of those boxes that the Raiders will have to check off, you know, as time goes on. We mentioned that Ed Brock Bauer's not been there. Very well likely they would have drafted Fuaga from Oregon State. That wouldn't have been, that's he was penciled in, basically. As the pick, but Brock Bowers falls to him, and I think they made the right decision. You can obviously see that he might be a generational player if he stays on the path that he's on. So it's the offensive line is not by any stretch of the imagination a finished product. They're gonna keep tinkering with that, but you should be able to get it. I do believe there's enough talent there, especially when you get Jackson Powers Johnson to be a functioning offensive line. And we said this. I think you were on the show when we got here. When we talked about this, it's not going to be a top 10 offensive line this year,
right?
But if it's league average, if it's 15,
I think we had this discussion. Yeah. It doesn't need to be,
but it can't be as bad.
But it cannot be as bad as bottom of the barrel, under 2 yards per carry.
No.
It's not even that they're not getting a push; they're getting blown back.
Right,
they're getting pushed back. Andre James has had a rough start to the season, weeks one and two. We talked about left guard. It is just,
and we
there's
hear,
nothing happening. And Colton Miller is clearly trying to find his form, because there's a couple plays, and not even just the physical plays, but the communication.
Yeah.
And a lot of that goes with who's playing left guard or what. But first play of the game, communication issue. 5 sacks on the day. I counted 3 of them were communication issues.
Right.
2 of them you just flat out beat.
Yeah.
So.
That's not good either.
Which is not a plus one way or another, but a lot of work to do. We are just a lot of meat left on the bone in this conversation.
And I don't
know
about your Twitter families, but I've gotten a lot of Zamir's vision and da da da. Look, I saw enough over the last 4 games of last year. He's got vision. He can make people miss. He can run over people. What I've seen so far this year, Clay, is he has no chance. Like, there's vision. When you're getting hit behind the line of scrimmage, when there are no holes, I'm sure he could do better as well, but it's been more the offensive line, and I appreciate, quite frankly, Antonio Pierce laying the blame exactly where it belongs.
Yeah, man. I see it also on social media, you know, about if Josh Jacobs was here, this would be a different story. It would be the same replicated issue that you had last year with Josh Jacobs. Right. The offensive line wasn't getting off the ball. The same problem exists. Coming up next, more on this, on the offensive line from Antonio Pierce, and your thoughts as well at 702-365-9200.
Morning Tailgate with Vinny, Vince, and Clay on Raider Nation Radio.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about our new friends over at Milano Nail Shop in Henderson, right around the corner from the Raiders facility out in Henderson. They're at 3458 Rose Park Boulevard, and they're doing a great thing. You know, they manicures, pedicures, acrylics, Gel-X, hard gel, hybrid gel, dipping, all those great things that they do. And whether it's for yourself, ladies that are out there, or maybe you guys, you got an anniversary coming up, or you know, a birthday, whatever the case. You know, our loved ones like to be pampered, like to be taken care of, and that's what exactly what they do over at Milano Nail Lounge. And now they're offering 20% off if you just tell them, hey, Vinny from the Morning Tailgate Show, Raider Nation Radio, sent you. They'll take care of you with a 20% discount. And if you buy a gift card, they'll give you another 20% gift, or excuse me, 20% discount. They're at 3458 St. Rose Parkway. You could call them at 725-204-7384. Tell them Vinny sent you. Say hello to Tony, the great manager over there. Or you can even go to their website to make an appointment at Milano's Nail Lounge, NV.com. That's Milano Nails Lounge, NV.com. Tell them Vinny from the Morning Tailgate sent you and get your 20% off your next service there.
Wrapping up the first hour here on the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio. There's a story that just keeps on growing, Clay. And you found another one.
Yeah, so, it's another brick in the wall.
So we were talking about a story that happened, I guess it would have been two nights ago, in San Francisco, Oracle Park. First ever
Oppo
home run into McCovey Cove. Heliot Ramos. Incredible. And watching the video, it was, I mean, you talk about getting all of it, how difficult hitting an oppo home run is. One. Two, to do it in the splash zone. Incredible. We were talking about that yesterday. Well, a new story has surfaced, if you will, Clay and Vinny. Michael Harris II, the Atlanta Braves, hit a grand slam, and he hit it in McCovey Cove. Just the fourth ever grand slam to land in the water in San Francisco, in the Bay, okay? The first ever by a road player. There's this guy, McCovey Cove Dave, who lives out in the water.
Lives.
He's amphibious.
Every day, every home game, he goes out there with his kayak, and he's the retriever of the baseballs that go in McCovey Cove.
Right, full-time job.
He's got, I think the report said he has 58 baseballs that he has recovered over the years. Well, Michael Harris II hits this one over McCovey Cove.
Wants the ball, probably.
McCovey Cove Dave is the guy who collects it.
Right.
Braves go up to him and say, McCovey Cove Dave, because I'm assuming that's how they talk to him. McCovey Cove Dave. Can we get that ball back? We'll give you a signed ball, signed back. You know, the whole song and dance. You know what McCovey Cove Dave says? Nah. No.
Oh.
Just a flat out no.
Tough guy.
And they say, well, what do you want for it? You know, playing hardball, if you will. Apparently, this report says, I want to be an employee of the San Francisco Giants, and I'll give you the ball back. That's what this report says. Now, Dave was asked if that was the report. He said that is not what he asked for. He asked for a parking spot where the San Francisco Giants employees and media park on game days.
Valuable.
Oh. Super valuable.
Valuable.
Those are kind of coveted spots.
So he
there.
Doesn't want to, this is what he's saying. He doesn't want to be employee, but he does want to park where the employees park because he goes to every game.
It's a good, I like it.
And he says, I think that's fair. Well, the organization is saying the Giants are saying, mind you, he's asking the Braves for that. In
the Corleone family doesn't have that kind of juice anymore.
So there's a lot going on here, obviously. Michael Harris II was asked, because the answer is still no. He still has the ball, and now he's trolling other trolls on social media, taking pictures with the ball, all this stuff.
McCovey Mike is doing that.
McCovey Dave.
Dave.
Vinny. Yeah. It's a story. McCovey Cove Dave.
He said something like, I'd even give it to Cooperstown before I would give it to the team.
Yeah. And so Michael Harris II goes, all right, I'll just go hit another one.
Yeah.
So great response from him. Yeah. But I guess the question as we wrap up hour one is what would that liken to in football? The only thing I can think of is an Everybody Loves Raymond episode where they were at Yale. They were somewhere near Yale. Kicker kicked a field goal, and Frank Barone was in the stands, and he caught the game-winning field goal, and he ran out with the football, and he was holding it hostage.
Yeah.
Frank Barone for all. And then, you know, at the end, he gives it away because of a son's love for his father.
He's going to get the ball, right? We figure that.
I don't know.
They'll come to their
senses. McCovey Cove Dave seems to be driving a hard bargain, and it feels like his offer is a final one. He either gets his parking spot, or you're not getting the ball.
Hmm.
I mean, I feel like that's an easy, just give him the parking spot, right? I mean,
but that's on the Giants, like you said. This is the Braves. It's and he threw that. I'm not giving it back to the player. So this is a little bit of anti-Braves or anti. Anybody else but the Giants?
And you figure like there's been some negotiations with the Giants over the years that have gone awry.
If he's gotten 60 baseballs in McCovey Cove, so you would imagine he's had multiple conversations. Mm-hmm.
And the Giants keep saying, "Keep your balls, keep your balls, keep your balls to yourself."
The Giants are probably like, as soon as that ball went in the water, the Giants were like, "You ain't getting that ball back."
Yeah. Nope.
We know how those negotiations go. What would that be like in football? Would it just be a game-winning kick kind
probably
of thing?
Do you know who scored the first touchdown at Allegiant Stadium?
Well, it depends. The first ever touchdown? Raiders touchdown or first ever touchdown?
First. Who was the first ever?
First ever was Alvin Kamara.
Against the Saints. Okay. Yeah.
The first ever Raiders touchdown was?
Alec Ingold.
The great Alec Ingold.
Fullback.
And what did he do? He threw that ball so hard.
And there were no fans.
And there's no fans. But then as soon as he threw it, you could see it. He's, I need that ball.
Yeah. Right. He didn't. And, you know, back in 2020, there was nobody that you had to negotiate with.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that would be like. I guess if A.J. Cole just shanks one super hard.
So two guys going oppo, huh? Have you ever covered minor league baseball?
Oh, yeah. Tri-Cities. Tri-City Dust Devils.
I remember being on the bench at a minor league game. A story that I was working on. And somebody hits two home runs in the game, right?
Okay.
And after the second one, and I'm just on the bench with the team, he comes back to the dugout. And every player on the team was, it's time for you to get tested. Like, they were openly joking about, yeah, you're going to get a knock on your door.
The juice is loose?
Yeah, the juice is loose, exactly. Test that man. So, yeah.
There's so many more baseballs at a baseball game as opposed to a football. You know, like, the umpires have a big bag of balls. There's balls everywhere, right? Like, could you just go and, like, say, yeah, all right, we'll do this. Here's a ball. It's not the ball. But only one that knows that is McCovey Dave, right?
Right.
McCovey Cove Dave.
Yeah, I forgot.
Come on.
Show our respect. He has a title. It's an official title.
Don't like this guy. I'm sorry. I'm going to call him McCovey Mike. McCovey Jack.
Oh, man.
More ire against the Giants organization.
You're not going to get your parking pass.
I love it.
Which, by the way, would be, did you think about, real quick, sorry about that, Clay, how much money we've saved over the years somebody tried to do this story one time. Like, if you were to add up the cost that it would have cost for you to go to all the games that you've gone and the parking passes that we get, thankfully, to do our job, how much money that would actually be. We're probably talking.
Can't count that high.
Hundreds of thousands?
And that land in that area is coveted. I would have to think every parking spot almost is accounted for. So it's a premium space.
It's $100 a pop, I would imagine, right?
Easy.
For Raider games for NFL games.
Yeah, it would start there.
Right.
We'll take a look at Jason Fitz's thoughts on the game coming up next from Yahoo Sports, Raider Nation's Grammy winner.